Welcome to Walking with Jesus, a devotional journey through books of the Bible brought to you by Forest Hill Presbyterian Church. I'm Pastor Jason Van Bemmel. We're at the beginning of 1 Peter chapter 4, day 18 of our journey through the book of 1 Peter, looking at verses 1 and 2 of 1 Peter 4 and asking this question, does physical suffering end sinning? Does physical suffering end sinning? 1 Peter 4, 1 and 2. Since therefore Christ suffered in the flesh, arm yourselves with the same way of thinking. For whoever has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin, so as to live for the rest of the time in the flesh, no longer for human passions, but for the will of God. 1 Peter 4, 1 and 2 in the English Standard Version. Well, my family sometimes enjoys playing the game of life. One of the things you face in the game of life are options. Choices with consequences. At the beginning, you can choose to go to college or start working right out of high school. Later, you can make the choice to go back to school and get more education. You get to choose which house to buy, whether to focus on family or career, and other choices. But some choices are not in the game. You can't just choose to be a rock star or a professional athlete on your career selection choice. You can't choose to develop superpowers either. Well, when we come to a really difficult Bible verse, like 1 Peter 4, 1 and 2, you have to decide what it most likely means, and you have options. Last time we looked at the difficult passage at the end of 1 Peter 3, and we talked about some methods we need to use to interpret challenging texts in the Bible. Today we're digging a little deeper into the same approach as we turn from the end of chapter 3 to the beginning of chapter 4. Why? Well, because if the end of 1 Peter 3 is tricky to interpret, I think the opening of chapter 4 is even more difficult. In terms of understanding the meaning of the passage, the New Testament doesn't get much trickier than the end of 1 Peter 3 and the beginning of 1 Peter 4. So it seems wise to discuss further how we handle difficult passages, especially since, unlike the end of 1 Peter 3, I'm not really sure I can say confidently what 1 Peter 4, 1 and 2 definitively means. Why am I not sure? Because sometimes you can follow all the guidelines for correct interpretation and still have several possible alternatives left for the meaning of a passage. So, to follow our rules from last time, we need to consider the context and begin with what's clear. Here's what we can see clearly in 1 Peter 4, 1 and 2, especially given the context of the letter and the surrounding verses. First of all, we're being instructed in how to be strong in the face of suffering. Secondly, we're being directed to follow the example of Christ, who remained strong and faithful to God when he was called to suffer. Third, from what follows in verses 3 and 4, it's clear that Peter wants to encourage us to resist temptation and worldliness. And fourth, it's also clear that remaining strong and resisting temptation and worldliness while we're suffering involves the right kind of thinking, since we're told to arm ourselves with the same way of thinking that Christ had. So then, what does Peter mean when he says, "For whoever has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin, so as to live the rest of the time in the flesh, no longer for human passions, but for the will of God"? Well, following our established guidelines, Peter can't mean something which violates established biblical teaching or contradicts the rest of Scripture. So we need to eliminate the impossible. Physical suffering doesn't free you from ever sinning again. Even physical suffering that comes to us as persecution for the name of Christ doesn't free us from ever sinning again. We have the example of Peter himself to prove this. Peter had been imprisoned and beaten for preaching Christ in the temple, yet later, at Antioch, Paul had to confront Peter publicly to his face for his hypocrisy. Read Galatians 2, 11-14 to get that story. Peter had physically suffered for Christ, and yet still sinned. Paul also had suffered for Christ repeatedly, and yet in 1 Timothy 1:15, he could still refer to himself as the chief of sinners. So what does Peter mean? Well, I see four possible options. Option one, he could be referring to Christ's suffering in the flesh on the cross, and encouraging us to remember that Christ has ceased to have anything to do with sin. That seems unlikely, because Jesus never sinned, and this seems to be talking about a sinner who ceases from sin. Second, option two. He could be talking about someone who dies, because when a believers die, you know, we cease from sin. But that option also seems unlikely to me, because he then talks about how such a person lives the rest of his time in the flesh, not for human passions, but for the will of God. Well, third, option three, he could mean that if we consider the fact that once we die, we will cease from sin, that will encourage us, while we are still living, to live for God's will, which is of eternal value, and not for human passions, which are fleeting and temporary. I like this option. It just requires reading the word that's translated as for as really meaning that. Listen to this. Arm yourselves with the same way of thinking. That is, thinking that whoever has suffered in the flesh or died has ceased from sin, so as to live the rest of the time in the flesh no longer for human passions, but for the will of God. I think that's a viable option. Option number four, ceased from sin could mean not completely stopping sinning, but just cease living for sin, like the rest of the world. So Peter would be talking here about a fundamental shift in how we live, not a complete absence of sin from the life of a believer. I think options three and four are both strong possibilities. Option three seems more likely to me, but it does require reading one word slightly differently, as that instead of for. But in the end, both of these options are biblical true things to know and believe. When we die, we will stop sinning. That means that living for the will of God is of eternal value, and living for human passions is temporary and fleeting. And also, as believers, we have a fundamentally different relationship to sin than we had before we came to know Christ. So both of these options are biblical true things to know and believe. So it's not 100% critical that we make a decision between the two. Perhaps the ambiguity is helpful so that we keep both of these truths in mind.